the National Archives podcast series, Developing Descriptive Interoperability, A Call to Action, presented by Jenny Bunn.
Just over a quarter of a century ago, that was 1987, Canadian archivists published a call to action, or more specifically, they published a call for the development of descriptive standards. In making the case for those standards, they argued, amongst other things, that the existence of standards would facilitate the exchange of information about holdings between archivists and allow archivists to take full advantage of the opportunities automation offers. So moving forward to today, we now have a number of standards, and information exchange about holdings is commonplace, and archivists have not failed to take advantage, although arguably not full advantage, of the opportunities automation offers. Now, the extent to which this transformation has been dependent on or caused by the development of descriptive standards is kind of a difficult question, and it's not one I'm going to be talking about today. Rather, what I'm going to be doing today is selectively, and I will say selectively, examining the history of standards development, information exchange and automation, and that's firmly in an archives kind of context, in order to provide a clearer vision for the future and a renewed call for action. But I'm aware that I don't want to look like a teacher, and I'm not going to make this into a history lesson, so it's going to be a quiz. So you have to think of your answers in your head and keep score, okay? So unlike the talk, which I started in 1987, I'm not going to start in 1987 with my kind of history. I'm going to start at a different time. I'm going to start with the establishment in the United States of America of the National Information Systems Task Force. So my first question: when was the National Information Systems Task Force set up? Now, you don't have to call out. Just have a think in your head, and I'm going to give you the answer. It is 1977, okay? Now, the National Information Systems Task Force has a history written of it, or the history of its work is written by Richard Little, who was involved in it. And according to him, they were kind of a bit flexible when it came to their remit, okay? They started out by thinking that what they were concerned with was an information retrieval system to make archival collections widely available to researchers. That's what they thought they were doing. But they changed their mind, and they actually came to the conclusion that all they were trying to do was establish the precondition for archival information exchange. And that attempt to establish that precondition resulted in a data elements dictionary and a machine-readable format for archival information exchange. So your next question is, what was that format called? And you can have a bonus point if you know what the acronym stands for. And the answer is US Mark AMC. Now, American archivists were not the only ones kind of looking at this, obviously. And in the UK, British archivists also kind of developed a data elements dictionary of sorts through the work of the Methods of Listing Working Party. And then subsequently that became, there was an archival description project established, and that led to the first edition of MAD, Manual for Archival Description. So your final question is, when was that first edition? And the answer is 1986. Now, the movement of descriptive standards was really kind of picking up speed in the mid-80s. And in 1987, there was this call for action that I've mentioned earlier. And in 1988, there was an invitational meeting of experts on descriptive standards. And who knows, some of you may even have been there. But where was it held? And the answer is Ottawa. And following on from that invitational meeting of experts, the ICA, because it was held under the aegis of the International Council on Archives, the International Council on Archives established the Ad Hoc Commission for the Development of Descriptive Standards, and it was that body that ultimately developed what became ISADG, General International Standard Archival Description. Okay, so my next question is, when was ISADG published? Now, this is a tricky one, because I'm talking about publication after it had been adopted, not publication prior to when it was. And the answer is 1994. And at the same time as that was going on, at the same time as the ICA were moving towards the development of the International Standards ISADG, the Americans were doing something different. They had a working group on standards for archival description. And they weren't developing a standard, the working group on standards for archival description. They were working on something else. So what did they actually end up producing, that working group? They ended up by producing a book called Standards for Archival Description, a Handbook, which was published in 1994. And I don't know if anybody's seen that book. It's a bit like what SAT have been doing, our data standards group, with like lists of different types of standards. So it's a collection of information about a whole plethora of technical standards, conventions and guidelines, which the group thought were relevant to archivists who were doing description. And so it contains information about things as varied as ISO 74981 Part 1, which is Information Processing Systems, Open Systems Interconnection Basic Reference Model, which I'm sure you all refer to a lot, to the Chicago Manual of Style. So it's a really sort of big project. And that book is now available on the internet. So if you want to look at it, it's on the internet. So we're going to move forward now, and we're going to go to EAD and the development of EAD. And I imagine that we're kind of moving on to slightly more familiar territory now. But my first question on EAD is, what was the name of the document type definition from which EAD eventually evolved? I think we always should remember that encoded archival description had its origins not in an attempt to encode archival description or some abstract concept of archival description. It was an attempt to encode a certain genre of material that we call the finding aid. And there are consequences to that, and we all know what those are. But before we do, one final question on EAD. When was version 1 released? And the answer is 1998. So you'll be very, very pleased to know that I'm coming to the end of my quiz and end my history lesson. But I've got one final question, and that is a slightly more recent question. What is ISO 23081 about? It is about information and documentation, records management processes, and metadata for records. Okay. So that was a bit of fun, but there is a serious point, really, obviously, because I feel that the story that is told and the story that I've just told is often one of kind of a simple progression from not having standards to having them. And I worry that when we see it in that way, it blinds us to some of the differences in perspective, some of the tensions and approaches that were evident in that story if you look for them. And I think we should look for them, because I think that they can help us in the future and help guide how we think about interoperability in the future. So I'm going to just pull out two tensions which I see in all of this, one between open and closed, and one between what I would term information exchange and archival description. So starting then with this idea about open and closed, some of these projects, and I think in this probably most noticeably the American Working Group on Standards for Archival Description, they've taken a very open approach. So they have looked not to develop their own standards, but to actually look at what's there and to look outwards very much towards other people and other profession standards. And this is a quote from Lawrence Dowler, who was on that working group. Now, others have taken a slightly more closed approach. And I think that one of those more closed approaches is probably our own manual for archival description. Because when US Mark AMC was developed, the people who developed it thought that what they had developed was a machine-readable format for exchange of data about archives and manuscripts collections. That's what they thought they had developed. But the people who were developing MAD saw what they were trying to do as an attempt to construct a library-compatible standard for archival description. And I think they thought that was a bad thing. That's library compatible in a bad way. And library compatible in a bad way, there were sort of problems with US Mark AMC. The first one was, well, a number of problems. One was that it was associated with the use of the Anglo-American Cataloguing Rules, second edition, or AACR2. But then, you know, the Canadian Rules for Archival Description, or RAD, are also based on AACR2. And even our own NCA rules for the construction of names kind of give them some attention, even if they don't always follow them, you know, but they at least know about AACR2. Secondly, the problem many had with US Mark AMC was that it doesn't allow for levels of description. But I would say that was a moot point, because there was nothing inherent in it that meant you couldn't have levels of description. For example, in Jennifer Hogarth and Gillian Martin's 1992 survey of automated practice in UK record offices, they make mention of the fact that at the V&A Museum in London, archival listing was done in US Mark AMC, and moreover, They mentioned the fact that the archivist had requested that the software be customised so that an archival hierarchy could be seen on the screen. This was achieved by providing an enhanced analytics function. If necessary, 5 levels of description could be accessed. Now, admittedly, the V&A experiment in using levels in this way was the exception rather than the rule, nor was it terribly successful. But it makes the point that there was nothing inherent in it that meant you couldn't do levels of description. So I think the problem that we have, another problem, another tension that is available in this story that comes out, is that there's a sort of difference of approach between whether you're trying to do information exchange or archival description. So, as I said, those people involved with the development of US Mark saw themselves as very much interested in information exchange, and they were also very, very keen that they should not get led into the depths of the descriptive standards problem. Now, I would argue that other projects, those which have kind of seen themselves as more concerned with archival description, have often ended up well and truly mired in that problem. And worse than that, they haven't always recognised that fact. Okay, so what is the descriptive standards problem? I would see that problem as being the fact that whenever we try to create standards for archival description, and I'm saying we as an archivist here, we need to first define what archival description is, and then when we start trying to define what archival description is, we start trying to define what it is that we do, and then we start trying to define what it is that we believe in and what we stand for, because ultimately, in the past at least, archivists have not defined archival description, it has defined us. So this is kind of the problem that we've got. So it's so tied up in what we're trying to do that we don't necessarily, A, examine it properly. We don't think about it properly. So let's look at the ISADG again, going on to ISADG. ISADG, when it was developed, initially was accompanied by a statement of principles. And that statement of principles was sort of quietly dropped because there was not agreement on it. People could not agree. At the ICA International Congress on Archives in Montreal in 1992, there was an open forum at which it was discussed. There was opposition, and eventually it was quietly dropped. So another way that you can kind of see this difference between information exchange and archival description is if you look back at a debate that took place in the 1990s and early 2000s about metadata versus archival description. There was quite a lot in the archival literature about an opposition, but will metadata replace archival description? And on the face of it, that was partly about life cycle versus continuum approaches, but it was also about the fact that we weren't thinking properly about archival description in a way. We had assumed too much. So, for example, if you look at an article by Wendy Duff called Evaluating Metadata on a Meta Level, this was presented at a seminar in the Netherlands, which followed a working meeting which dealt with the question of metadata versus archival description. In it, Duff makes a comparison between ISADG and what's called the Business Acceptable Communication Model. Now, the Business Acceptable Communication Model had been developed at the University of Pittsburgh in the early 1990s, and it arose from a project which sought to look at the issues raised by electronic records. And Duff argues that between those two models there's a difference of approach, because whereas those developing the business acceptable communication model were interested in identifying metadata needed for electronic records to serve as evidence, those developing ISADG were interested in exchanging data about their holdings. So I have to say that I am coming to the conclusion that I wish to view ISADG not as a standard for archival description, but as a metadata schema to facilitate information exchange. Because as Duff points out, it really doesn't deal with the sort of questions that I think archival description needs to deal with around the authenticity of records, because it assumes that that question has already been dealt with by the creation of multi-level description as a way to preserve provenance. So it does not advance our thinking in any way about how we should describe digital records in a digital environment to ensure that their recordness is maintained over time. Rather, that sort of thinking has become the province of developments such as that ISO 23081 standard that I mentioned earlier, such as even things like possibly PREMIS, which is seen as about records management or digital preservation and not about archival description. I mean, I want to celebrate ISADG. It has achieved an awful lot. Certainly over the past 20 years, it has been instrumental in furthering archival information exchange in this country. But in the same same time frame, I really don't think ISADG has furthered our thinking about archival description. I think it's becoming less of a standard for archival description and more of a straitjacket. So I want to mention my call to action, like, which, as I say, is a kind of academic call to action, so it's kind of more about changing mindsets rather than actually doing anything. So I think we should think carefully if there is a distinction between information exchange and archival description, and if there is, what that nature of that boundary might be. I think we should be careful not to assume that creating and exchanging multi-level descriptions means that we have done the job, dealt with the question of preserving meaning and context. And I think we should maybe possibly try and, hijack the concept of interoperability to develop a kind of new, more expansive, descriptive interoperability concept. Now, I'm only beginning to sort of sketch out quite what I mean by that, so you'll have to excuse this, it's a bit sort of rough and ready, but I've got this sort of plan. In as much as I can, I think we're quite good at this sort of information exchange mapping across, but what I'm really interested in is trying to connect this sort of thing with this sort of thing with this sort of thing so that we can really preserve meaning over time rather than just exchange information about our holdings. So that's my point of view, and I'm going to stop there.
This talk was recorded on the 7th of March 2013 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.